Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday and Sunday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for Perspectives, and joining us today is a good friend of the station, Mr. Jackson Polk. Jackson is the film editor, producer, shooter, a little bit of everything. And if you've seen some of his DVDs, they're awesome. If you want to learn a little bit about El Paso's history, his latest one is The Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter. When I saw some footage of this, it's incredible how big that stack was and those men who had to go up there and change those bulbs. But first, yes. Before we get to that,
you saw that part, yep.
Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us here today, Jackson.
Yeah, it's good to be with you. Thanks for the invite.
So tell us a little bit about Smelter. You know, it had been back and forth. You know, what are we going to do with it? What are we not going to do with it? And finally, they decided to bring that big tower down. But it's an El Paso icon, considered by some people.
Oh, yes, and it's gone.
Yeah.
So if you want to see the tour, you got to buy the DVD.
So tell us about when you got invited to go film this. What did you think? Had you been in there before, or what did you think you were going to see in there?
First day I went there, it was the day I took a camera in there. The smelter has always been off limits to everyone except those workers, and even they were restricted into where they could go within the plant. They were color-coded. Did you know that?
They wore jumpsuits
of a certain color, and the guy, the foreman, could at a glance see a guy out of line, fire him. But, no, my interest was the history, and I wasn't exactly invited to go in there. I asked. And when the bankruptcy trustee took over the property in 2009, by 2010 early, started making public plans on what he's going to do in there. And I got to thinking, has anybody ever video recorded any of the material in there, any of the locations, any of the buildings, any of that? And the answer was no. I mean, there had been some people taking photos illegally because ASARCO did not want you in there with a camera. They wanted to control everything. However, we found out ASARCO itself sent a camera crew in there a couple of times, and we got their footage. So when it was all over, their footage became available through the bankruptcy trustee. So we utilized that footage of the place actually operating, plus what we took on site between 2010 and 2013, and we video recorded everything that was still standing.
But you guys were probably the first and only to get footage of inside the tower.
Probably. As it turned out, we said, can we get in everywhere? And the bankruptcy guy said, sure, why not? I mean, you're at your own risk. You sign a disclaimer that if you pick up some chemicals that you don't really need, it's your problem. You know, so we understood all the risks, and so we went through it all, and a bunch of camera crew people were dying to get in there. So one day the tour guy said, hey, you want to get in the stack? I said, sure. So we wandered around in there, and that was just the first time. We went back a number of times. And also to record the stack, another thing we did, we put cameras on two guys that were sent up to change the light bulbs. All of my camera crew people wanted to go with them. And you're not trained for high-altitude stuff. These were high-altitude welders.
So that's how those pictures were taken.
Yeah, we put a camera on the guy and handed them cameras to put in their pockets. So when they stopped along their way up, they pulled out those handheld high-definition cameras and took whatever pictures. The other mission on that day was that the bankruptcy trustee wanted to have pictures of the video of the stack himself because he needed to have engineers take a look at it without sending them up there. This was the next best thing. So that worked out well. But ASARCO is just one of the many things that has gone on in El Paso.
What's interesting, I think, Jackson, the fact is when those guys were taking those pictures, when they got to the top of the stack, incredible view.
Oh, yes. Well, they did a selfie up there. That was kind of cute. But that's also 828 feet above the terrain. And after about 20 feet, I get nervous. So the other 800 is like, so what? That's way up there. And it's so far up there, I don't know why the thing didn't fall over under its own weight, except, of course, it was designed not to. And they said it was designed to withstand 100-mile-an-hour wind, so I guess it would. But we video recorded that whole thing, and it was interesting that slowly but surely that whole site disappeared over 3 years. The only thing left today standing is the administration building, what's left of it. And I want to talk about that for a minute because the admin building that's there could be saved. That's the one building that could still be saved off that site, the only one left now. But it was built in 1887. It's an adobe, and that building sits on original clean dirt, so there's no need to remediate underneath it. It was built before the smelter became operating. Think about it that way. So that is a clean piece of property right around it they could clean up, and that could turn into an interpretive museum kind of thing. But right now it's a matter of, okay, what are you going to do about it? The citizens of El Paso need to present a plan to the bankruptcy trustee, which is what I'm trying to do right now, to try to save that building. And what he told us was he would deed the building to a viable entity. So we said, what does that mean? Well, a museum that has standing, or maybe a county government, or a city government, or a college, like a university. If they were to take it over and agree to fix it up, he would simply deed it to them.
Because that whole area, the last time I went there, and actually the only time, was probably in the 80s. We were there for some reason, and I remember looking at it, because there were still a lot of buildings around there, and it looked to me like a little small western town is what I envisioned it as and what I saw it.
You mean what it could become?
What it was. Oh. What it was, because the way the houses were, and I think there were some of the houses left from La Calavera in that area.
That's still occupied. Yeah, Calavera never got removed.
People, when you're talking about 1887, this building put together, then there was a lot of activity going on there, a lot of workers who lived there, worked there, even before the Mexican Revolution, obviously.
Oh, 1910. Yeah, sure. Oh,
a lot of activity going on there.
They were doing 400 people on a shift, three shifts a day. They had 1,200 people going through there on a daily basis. There was a lot of people went through ASARCO to work there. And also, you mentioned housing. There used to be housing up on what they call El Alto, the main flat area that you see from the freeway. El Bajo is what they call down in the riverbed, and that had a lot of smelter town in it. That's where their school was, the church was down there, grocery stores. That got remediated in the early 70s, so that got blown away. There were houses up on top, on the upper area. There was management houses, big, huge, fancy houses for some of the managers. They had what's called a Mexican village out near the front door. There was another village out behind toward one of the back arroyos that went decades ago. But there were people living all over the place up in there, and having the smelter occur right in the middle of them. That I don't know how that would work. I mean, you put some laundry out on the line on a good smelter day. Whoa, you have to wash your clothes again, you know what I mean? So I don't know how those people lived over there. But what we did, we documented the physical plant. And that's one thing that was about to be blown away. It's 2010 forward. It was about to go, so we jumped in there with cameras at our expense. And put the thing on video.
I thought it was interesting because, as I mentioned, I haven't watched all of the video, but I've watched part of it. When they were going into some of these buildings that were so dark, I wonder what they're going to find in there, what could be in there.
Well, now that's a different subject because we went in twice, sometimes daytime, sometimes at night.
Uh-huh.
In the night times, we actually took a psychic with us. And what she was doing was releasing the souls that she said were caught there. Now, you take that or you leave that, but we watched her work. She walks in and she can sense the people that are still there but deceased. And they're stuck there. They think they still work there. So what she did, she walked in, would talk to them in her way. She would light a candle and say, if you wish to leave, you can focus on my voice and this candle and you can be out of here. And, okay, what's our evidence, right? Like, well, I'm a TV guy. What am I watching here? I don't know. Except we had still camera guys with us. And every time she'd say, look over in that corner or over in that corner, she'd point, the still cameras would focus and click. And there would be one of those big orbs right where she said the person had been. So that happened consistently, time after time. That's what made a believer out of me. And sometimes she would, like, get down and put a candle down, and we had cameras at different angles. They would both get the same orb. So it wasn't like dirt on the lens. It was an object in front of her that normally you don't see.
Is that in the video? I don't remember seeing that.
The last tour of the El Paso smelter, no. What I'm describing to you is what is in our ghost videos.
Oh, ghost videos, okay.
Because we shot those there as well.
Okay.
And actually, the big ghost video on the smelter has yet to come out.
It's interesting what you're talking and describing, because it sounds almost like a Stephen King novel where at night this plant comes to life and all these people are working, and then at day.
Well, the way she described it is that this is a full place, you know. So I mean, that's just a side story for what we did, because we were documenting the history. And then it got to be where we got to thinking, well, what about all these deceased people? So I asked the psychic to come over, and that's what we did. So that's a separate video. That's called Ghost Stories of El Paso, Volumes 4. So we saw in Volume 3 the beginning of that subject. Volume 4, when we get that out, that will be a full description.
As far as the tower itself, the stack.
Chimney.
As you and I discussed, some people called it the Ellis Island of El Paso, Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
As far as you know, were there any deaths, anybody fall from going up there?
We never heard that. If it happened, we didn't hear about it. Normally, what we did, we got two guys that worked there. One guy was 28 years in the powerhouse. He ran it, so he knew a lot about the place. The other guy was a design engineer, and he helped build the place. And when they say make something fabrication, make this happen, he'd go get a bunch of engineers and a bunch of material and make it happen. Those two guys were our tour guides. So when we walked to the smelter, one or the other knew everything about everything we were looking at. Process, the procedure, the equipment, the men, the who, the what, how it operated. And that's what we were talking about as we wandered around in there. What would happen in this room? Well, it'd be so noisy you couldn't have stood here, if you know, that kind of thing.
I would imagine when they were describing the catwalks up there, they were a little shaky in some areas.
Oh, they weren't all bolted on there anymore. That could be a surprise.
A lot of my colleagues here at the university, especially those who work in science, have said that El Paso, and the CDC actually pointed out that El Paso is a laboratory in itself. There's so much going on. And you, right before we started, you said that El Paso is an historical place.
It is.
Anywhere you go, there's history there.
Oh, yeah. Guaranteed. I mean, El Paso has had so much human activity through it. And the fact that it hasn't gone. Well, you could go out in the desert now and find an old fireplace called a midden from an Indian who built a fire 400 years ago. Because there's no big weather coming through here to wash that stuff out. There's no trees to grow up and erode the dirt. You know, the stuff in the desert just sits there. That's why all of our downtown architecture is so intact. Now, I mean, now they're trying to tear it down because they want to make more money out of it. Then that's a short-term thought. That's a stupid thought. But the fact is that we don't have the moisture and the ice in the winter. So those buildings are going to just sit there forever.
Since you're talking about architecture, let's talk about somebody that, unless you're from El Paso or know architecture, and I did a short-term series on Henry Troost. And Henry Troost, as you had mentioned before, he is probably one of the better-known architects of the Southwest and architects in general.
Certainly one of the most prolific. But also the styles he would use.
Oh,
see,
yes.
That's what's unusual about El Paso downtown history that I don't think even some of the building owners understand. Henry Troost used that as a masterpiece gallery. You can stand in San Jacinto Plaza, maybe not today, it's all torn up. But at one point, you could have stood there and seen about 15 different types of buildings. And the way one of UTEP professors, Dr. Max Grossman, describes it, it's the Beatles' White Album. I said, what do you mean? Well, the Beatles took the White Album and did a song from every kind of music that they could think of that's ever been recorded. They put one of those kinds of music songs on that album. Okay, well, that's what Troost did here. He made a definite statement in architecture. And that's what we have still mostly standing downtown.
And here we are talking about El Paso High School.
Oh, big time.
And then Federal Penitentiary.
Big time, La Tuna. The man put his touch on so many things. And here's what the interesting part is. We're sitting here now, what are you going to do about it? Watch the building owners decide to tear them down? That's nuts. You see, here's the problem. It's their building, but it's our history. We have to come to some kind of a compromise here. And for their long term, they can make more money if they'll go with the history. Their buildings would be a lot more valuable if they keep just the facade, put a new interior in it. You know, put modern plumbing in the whole bit. But keep the shell because that's what people come to look at. In January 2014, there were 50-plus architect students and historians who came to El Paso on a train. They paid $1,300 each for the privilege of coming to El Paso for 4 days to do nothing but look at Troost buildings. They came from Arizona, and they came from Tucson, where they had a whole lot of Troost buildings built because Troost was everywhere in the Southwest, except those idiots over there 35 years ago blew away most of their downtown. It's a bunch of old stuff. Let's get rid of it. And now it can't be found over there. They come here to look at it, and they paid big time to come see it. So I'm thinking, there's a tourist industry here we haven't even thought about.
And what you're talking about, most people who go to towns, not just in the Southwest, it could be Boston, it could be one of the other historical cities, they always have a section that's called Old Boston, Old Albuquerque, Old Town. And what you're discussing here is perfect.
We own it. We have it. It's here. Why? We don't have to invent it. You don't need a theme park. You don't need a SeaWorld. We've already got the Troost buildings downtown. Let's just take advantage of it. That one group of people coming to town was a real eye-opener. I think that's just the first of many, many that could come.
Jackson, one of the videos that you produced was about the gunfight that happened in how many seconds?
Four dead in 5 seconds.
Four dead in 5 seconds. And, of course, everybody knows El Paso as Dusty Town, the Marty Robbins song, Rosa's Cantina, I Feel a Deep Burning Pain in My Chest.
Plus, he got shot.
And the fact that even, what they say, Wyatt Earp moved to Tucson because he thought El Paso was too violent.
Yeah.
So do you think from a filmmaker's perspective and even a tourist that an Old West Town theme area or just Old West part in El Paso would make it?
Sure. I think you could do it if you could just use the original right there on San Antonio and El Paso streets. If you declared every Friday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, 4 o'clock, no matter what, there will be a reenactment on that corner, and then got the word out to the RV crowd and the tourist crowd, they'd show up every Friday afternoon at 4 and every Saturday afternoon at 4 to see that.
And isn't there a part of the Old West Town that used to be out at Magic Landing, I guess, at this place down here, McKinley's Wrecking or something?
It may be. There's been so many things torn up and pushed around. I do know that there was an Old West Town out on the end of Montana Street years ago called El Escondido. It was purchased and moved about 60 miles east.
There used to be a restaurant over there, right?
Yeah. El Escondido restaurant. But Nick Nebhan had put an old town behind him, and he built it slowly but surely. And he had some original old bar stuff from El Paso. Some guy came along in the early 2000s, bought it all, and moved it to Cornutus to start a new town out in Cornutus. That fell on its ear. And so all that old El Paso stuff just sitting in the desert. I got a call from a guy who says, I bought the jail cell bars. And he wanted to track them down. He was asking me what the history was. He thought Billy the Kid was behind him. I said, no. Billy the Kid was never in El Paso incarcerated that we know of. Anyway, the history, though, is everywhere like that. And it's a matter of now what are we going to do about it? We should have an Old West Town, either recreate the original, like I say, on every Friday, Saturday, or build one somewhere close by that's a replica. It's not that hard to do.
Now, one of the things that you also show in one of your DVDs, Concordia Cemetery, you did one of
those? Oh, yeah. Well, that's...
Okay. Well, Dennis and I were speaking to a colleague of ours last week, Dr. Ezra Capel. Dr. Capel is the... chairman of the Jewish Studies program. And he said when his father came down here from New York that he was just amazed seeing Concordia Cemetery and the fact that it was broken up into, you know, the Jewish part, the Chinese part.
Masonic.
And just talking about that, there were a lot of Chinese here in El Paso. So there's another tourist attraction there, the fact that there's so many people came through El Paso during the railroads, when the railroads, opera houses were big in El Paso, and it's a lot more than just gunfights.
Well, the Chinese section of that cemetery is probably the only Chinese cemetery of that era between San Francisco and maybe the East Coast even, or New Orleans or somewhere. Because when the railroads built into El Paso, this is kind of where they met. So when the workers were no longer needed, they were released. The Chinese workers, what are they going to do? So most of them ended up in Mexico. A lot of them wanted to come to the U.S. And so there's a lot of Chinese history in El Paso accordingly. And all of these neat TV stories. See, here's the thing, Louis. If you don't do television and get your word out about El Paso, if you're not using television, how in the world are you going to do it? You going to put pamphlets out in everybody's mailbox?
And
no!
Speaking of television and social media, there's a project that's just been launched on YouTube, and it shares El Paso history. You want to talk about that?
Oh, yes. YouTube, go there and go to El Paso History TV. That's a channel we've created. In 2013, I was recording all kinds of different things, short segments, edited pieces, lectures, full-blown two-hour discussions. We even put one of the Tom Lee Institute things on there. There is a lot of history that we put on in 2013. We put over 50 different TV segments, lectures, whatever, and we're still doing it. Well, I just put one on this week about the Buffalo Soldier change of the name at Fort Bliss. Well, who goes out there with a camera to shoot that, Channel 7, 4, whatever? But they're done with it when they edit the piece. They're gone. What we did, we're kind of like the C-SPAN of El Paso. I went out there and shot the whole darn thing, put it on YouTube. So if you didn't get to attend that event, now you can. There's lectures like that we have on the YouTube channel. All a bunch of lectures last fall at the History Museum. They had a real good series of lectures. We taped them. Those are now online. And this is, again, at YouTube. And this is free. And it's at El Paso History TV. So what I've decided to do is build an archive of El Paso material and put it out there and just see what happens. And right now people are starting to say, hey, I saw that weird lecture on the Socorro Mission that I never would have known about, except I saw it on YouTube because you put it there. Well, fine. You know, that's what we're doing.
When we were commemorating the 50th anniversary of John Kennedy's death, a lot of people said, I never knew that President Kennedy came to El Paso. I never knew that he stayed at the Cortez Hotel. And then somebody posted something about President Taft, President Theodore Roosevelt going through here just by train, and other presidents who have come through El Paso. So as you mentioned, yes, there is a lot of history, and not just gunfighters, not just Concordia Cemetery. Anywhere you go, there's historical value.
Oh, look, you can talk about the presidential visits. Taft and Diaz was the first ever international meeting. It was the first time a U.S. president ever left the country as president and went to Juarez. Their guy came over here. Our guy went over there. Hey, it was interesting. But it was a summit in 1909, way back there. So there's a lot that's gone on in the history of El Paso. But look at the military. You go from bows and arrows to nuclear weapons in this area right here. Within 80 miles of here, the first nuclear bomb went off. You know, there's a lot going on around here that you can think about and look at. And as far as a tourist destination, the whole point, Louis, is to get tourists to come here, drop their really good tourist dollars, and go home. I mean, they'll use our roads and infrastructure for a couple of days, but they'll pay us good money for the room and the event that they wanted to go see. They need to know it's here.
You recently filmed some things about Casner Range.
Casner Range is not saved. It needs to still be preserved. It's no longer going to be a military firing range, which is what it was. But because it was a military firing range, there's all kinds of unexploded ordnance out there. They don't know where it is, so you can't use the land. It's adjacent to Franklin Mountain State Park. The Frontera Land Alliance would like to have that land made permanent as part of the park, and that was why they asked me to do a film. I got the luxury of riding around in a helicopter and looking at El Paso from on top. Boy, that's a great way to look at El Paso. So that's what that video is. That's also on that same YouTube channel, El Paso History TV. It's a 9-minute video explaining what is Casner Range, why it's not completely saved, why it should be saved, and a whole bunch of pretty pictures of the Franklin Mountains that you'll never see unless you're in a helicopter.
And what about McGregor Range, speaking of rangers?
That one's permanent army. I don't think you'll ever see that one turned back to the public. However, there's another one going on now up against the mountain at White Sands, up against the Oregon Mountains. What they used to do at Casner, they're now doing up there. So maybe one day we'll go up there and make a city. I don't know.
Because you love history, I love history, and we were discussing that this is being taped on April 15th, which is the day that 149 years ago, President Lincoln passed away after enduring 9 hours after suffering a mortal wound from John Wilkes Booth. But the fact that social media didn't put it today in history as one of the top events shows you how people are looking at history nowadays and figuring out what is historical, what is not historical. And well, I guess it depends on the perspective.
Sure. I mean, that's historic. It certainly is. But the fact that it didn't hit social media, well, you know, maybe there's too much else going on. We're still looking for an airplane on the bottom of an ocean. That could take for the rest of your life. You know, who knows where that thing's going to go. But there's so much history, so many things going on that it's a matter of, in El Paso, I think we need to focus on what we can promote. And I think people will come here to see it. It's as simple as that.
As a producer and as a film historian and a filmmaker, you must be like a kid in a candy store as you sit out there. You go out, you step outside, and you look at El Paso. And
sure.
You're going, my gosh, look what I can do.
Well, El Paso
not just
is,
here, and Juarez.
Well, the valley.
Las Cruces.
The whole place, the area is a studio. I mean, I was editing some of this Casner Range video and realizing, oh, darn, I need another shot. Well, okay, I jump in a car and go get the shot. So that's real easy. I mean, I'm sitting in the middle of this whole place. Why don't I just jump in a car and go get the shot you need? I've done that so many times on editing videos for El Paso. I get to where, oh, I'm all set. Oh, wait a minute. I need another angle here. Oh, well, you know, in 20 minutes I could be over there. So I jump in the car and go get the shot. El Paso is so easy. There's never been a full-blown television expose of what is El Paso history. We could do movies here with the stuff that happened here. Look at the Salt Wars. Oh, my goodness. Just think what you could do with that. You like old Westerns? Man, you could make a heck of a thing happen with the Salt Wars. I mean, they were killing Texas Rangers in San Elizario. That's not a minor matter. Texas Rangers don't die real easy. You know, one Ranger, one fight. Well, that didn't work here. You know, it was a whole different paradigm. But that's history. That's stuff that we could be promoting. There was another Salt War, by the way, up in New Mexico. We can talk about that. I mean, there's so many things historic that have gone on here because of the Rio Grande River. It became the main point highway, if you will, north and south. So forever, El Paso has been connecting north and south. Then the 1840s, 50s, all of a sudden they find gold in California. Whoa, oh, now we're important east to west. And then the railroads come in 1881, and now we're everywhere. So El Paso has been a major crossroads in this part of the world since Don Juan de Oñate showed up. And what he did was make this is the center of where the Southwest was basically begun.
And not to put a negative spin on what you've been talking about, but because of what you just said, the thoroughfare, it's now become also a big major smuggling area for the drug cartels.
Yeah, but that'll come and go. I mean, you know, the whims and the desires of the people with their habits, it'll change. It'll go back to cotton and you know, something else someday. Right now, illegal is part of the trade, but that's ancillary. The major part of north-south commerce still occurs. I mean, you realize the internet goes through the pass of the north. A major trunk of the internet goes right under those bridges. So it's a matter of thinking a little bit differently. Yeah, they'll be smuggling stuff forever. If it's not pot or whatever, it'll be something else. It'll be electronic parts next time. Who knows?
Do you have plans as far as what your next movie is going to be?
Well, right now I'm working on a smaller project. It's going to be sort of a tribute to Rosa Guerrero, because Rosa has been the icon of El Paso's Hispanic world forever. But also, I mean, she's almost as Anglo as I am, even though she isn't. In her heart, she's an El Pasoan. See, that's what's different. So Rosa calls it a tapestry. So what we're going to do is make a tapestry of a video for Rose. That's what I'm doing right now. The other thing we should do in El Paso is a TV series about all of our stories. That's what I would love to do. If we could find some help. I mean, we're talking serious bucks to go reenact the Pueblo Revolt. But wouldn't that be a hoot? You talk about a big movie epic. Can you imagine hundreds of Indians being forced down here? Or how about reenacting the Oñate expedition going up? Oh, my goodness. That wagon train stretched out for 7 miles when Oñate and the boys were running up doing their caravans. I'd love to reenact those kind of things and show off El Paso in the world-class stage that it is on. See, we don't know that here. We don't know we're a world-class history place, but we are. And it's a matter now, can you show it? We can show it. Can we get the chance? That's where I'm at.
And as you mentioned earlier, with Rosa Guerrero, she is about as Anglo as you are. And we mentioned
in her heart.
Myself also.
Yeah.
Because we're confused. A lot of people expect, because you're Hispanic or you have a Hispanic surname, that you're going to speak Spanish.
Right, right.
And that's not the case, because as you and I were talking about, I'm a fifth generation American, and a lot of people have been here for a long time. And there are a lot of stories that we can tell, whether it be on the radio or video, because it truly is a melting pot.
Wherever you came from, you're an El Pasoan. That's the story we want to tell.
And a lot of people who come here and say, oh my gosh, I'm on the moon, I'm not coming back, they end up coming back.
Well, or they can stay gone because we don't need them. Otherwise, we'd love to have them. It's an attitude thing.
Jackson, thank you very much for being with us here today. And one more thing we forgot to talk about. Give us the web address again, if you want, for YouTube, and then where people can get your videos.
My site is ephistory.com, and you can get to all the YouTube sites through there. Or go to ephistory.com. You can go to YouTube. El Paso History TV is the name of the channel.
Thank you very much for being with us here today. We've been visiting with Jackson Polk. And Jackson is a local filmmaker. And his latest film is Last Tour of the El Paso Smelter. So if you want to find out what was inside that big stack, what it looked like, get some views from up on top of the stack from some of the workers who went up there. This is a great DVD. And again, as Jackson mentioned, you can also go to YouTube and type in El Paso History TV, and you can watch some of El Paso's history and listen to some lectures. And also, while you're Googling, why don't you Google Henry Trost and see what you find out about
that.
Oh,
my.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You can find this episode and past episodes of Perspectives by coming to our website, ktep.org. Click on the Listen button, and then check out the archives for Perspectives.
Perspectives is taped and produced at the KTEP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.